rock man. Yeah, I'm a hot rock man.
Look out. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Farm Machinery Digest Radio. I'm your host, Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer, coming to you from Cat Swamp Road in Warren County, New Jersey. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today on SiriusXM Channel 147 Rural Radio. And you know we get together here every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern and normally on Sunday at 6 p.m. But this week, due to the rodeo on Sunday, this episode will re-air, at 3 p.m. But it is always available as a podcast at farmmachinerydigest.com. Under the podcast tab, FMD Radio, or on most, if not all, podcast hosting sites, and that is one week after it airs. So this is going to be our third installment in getting your planter ready, right? Hot rodding your planter, tuning it all up for your best corn crop ever. It is important that you know that it is available as a podcast because you may want to listen to them succinctly one after another. You may want to, what they call it, binge listening on Farm Machinery Digest Radio so that you don't have a week in between these episodes. And the past 2 weeks, I was focusing on a more advanced planter. So checking voltage, checking alternator output, checking ground circuits, if it's a vacuum planter, doing a leak test using a smoke tester. And you may have listened to it and said, well, that's great, Hot Rod, but I don't have that type of planter. I got a finger meter in my planter, and I don't have a battery in my planter, and I don't have any vacuum on my planter. So, hey, I'm right there with you, buddy, because that's how my planter is. I have a custom-built planter that is, I call it my hot rod planter, because it is based upon a John Deere 7000 series. But there's really nothing much John Deere on it, so it's like building a drag race motor, right? So this is based on a Ford engine, but there's not really a Ford part in there. So it's a Ford-style part, a Ford specification part. And I have precision planting meters, but they're finger meters. I have Keaton seed firmers. I have Copperhead Ag Furrow Cruiser closing wheels. I have Shoup 13 blade or 13 wave or whatever they call it. I think 13 wave no-till cultivars and 2x2 double disc openers for my 2x2 fertilizer. And it is built on a 28-inch row spacing because we raise sweet corn and I wanted to get that little bit more a canopy. We do hand harvest and I'm too fat. Of course, I'm one of the pickers to go through 26-inch rows, but if I were thinner, I would probably have made it 26 or 27-inch rows because sweet corn needs all the canopy it could get. So the things that I spoke about the past two episodes about a battery, about an alternator, a ground circuit on the planter, vacuum checking your planter with a smoke machine did not apply to me. But as I said last in those two shows, is that you could take that and carry that information over to anything. So if you want to check a battery in your pickup truck, it's not going to be any different than checking a battery in your planter. If you want to smoke test your sprayer or something, it's not going to be any different, right? Even though it's planter focused. But this week, in our third and final episode, I would really have loved to have four or five episodes, but I do not want to beat you guys to death with a planter show, for the simple reason being is that I am blessed with a very large audience and everybody does not grow corn, raise corn. You may have a dairyman that you say, well, dairyman raises corn. Well, a lot of big dairies out west don't raise any crops. They just raise cows and milk cows. Or you may have a sugar beet guy. You may have a person with an apple orchard or a vineyard or raising hogs or tomatoes or other vegetables. And I know we have a lot of listeners that have orchards and raise nut trees. So that does not appeal to them what I'm talking about. But the most important thing with this show is to get fundamental knowledge. And hopefully, God willing, they take some of that knowledge and say, well, we don't have a corn planter, but we could take that same knowledge and transfer it to this. That's really what it's all about, a transfer of knowledge. But this week, in this final episode, we're going to be talking about some mechanical stuff on the planter that would be just as relevant on my little Mickey Mouse planter. All right, my old school, new school planter, which I call it. And it's, I have as much technology on that planter as I can without running a wire on it. So, and not that I'm against wires on a planter, but I'm a small operation. But what we're going to be discussing today is going to be, like I said, just as relevant to a brand new Fendt Momentum planter or my little John Deere 7000 base sweet corn planter. So I'm going to ask you to sit pat during this very, very brief sponsor break. And then when we come back, we're going to be discussing that. But never forget that agriculture runs on machinery and profits on reliability.
Out front tonight, the breaking news.
Stay informed and engaged with the stories that shape our world with the SiriusXM News channels.
Border Patrol and ICE have had to limit the...
From cable news to business.
And so the markets need to be prepared for that and the volatility and for that.
And international.
The strength of values. It's the strength of real freedom.
The SiriusXM News channels, starting at channel 112 and on the SiriusXM app.
When the Equity Commission first appeared in the American Rescue Plan, it was actually supported in congressional legislation. This department began the serious work of bringing that into existence. I can recall numerous steps that we undertook to kind of lay out the background, the scope, the mission. How is this thing going to be formed? How do we get people to buy into it? Before you knew it, we had a background, a scope, a mission. We had a membership balance plan. As I think about those early days, understanding how this Federal Advisory Committee Act, how we had to do this very transparently in the public with stakeholder input. We tried to explain to stakeholders the importance of doing this and the additional resources that we now had at USDA to bring this into existence. It was a robust process, and we finally got to the point where we started to ask that critical question of who's at the table, and more importantly, who's not at the table, and how do we get them there? And then we look at the challenges in the work, and I remember it seemed like we've been here before. What happened to all those other recommendations? And actually asking for, requesting a detailed accounting of the previous recommendations just to get us grounded again on the importance of this work. And we were able to push through it and get to this important milestone.
Real Ag Radio is Canada's only daily radio show focused on agriculture. Get expert advice on Agronomic Monday. Tuesdays and Wednesdays will cover a broad range of issues. Thursday we'll hear from farmers across the country on the Farmer Rabbit Fire. And we'll wrap things up Fridays with the Real Ag Issues panel with Kelvin Heppner and Lindsay Smith. Join us Monday through Friday at 4:30 Eastern. And don't forget about the replay at 7 in the morning on Rural Radio 147 Sirius XM.
Hey, everybody, my friends, welcome back to the show. And we're going to be talking about some mechanical things on planters. But before we get into that, I want to hopefully succinctly just give you a direction for your thought process. And as we all know, but we may not recognize, there's a difference in life knowing something and recognizing it and acknowledging it other than just knowing it. Like, say, well, I know that this guy lives down the road. He's a neighbor. I don't know anything about him. And sadly, so many farmers, from my experience, look at the planter that way, that they have an attitude, or it's good enough, or this is that, or they keep it outside in the weather and things rust and what have you. So that's not the first step to a stellar crop. But anyway, if that is the case, well, it's never too late to turn that around, either your thought process or physically your planter. But you need to look at every aspect of the planter, and you need to look at it individually. And what's nice about having a larger planter, no matter how many rows it is that you cover so many acres in less time. But also, let's say if you have a 24-row planter, and we'll make an argument against a one-row plant, let's say a two-row plant. So you have a two-row plant, you have a guy with a two-row planter, you have somebody with a 24-row planter. Well, the person with the two-row planter has two basic areas. When I'm saying areas, not just probably not a good term to use. It can only have things go wrong in two rows. when you have a 24-row planter, you could have 12 times the possibility of having problems. So in essence, let's say that the parallel arm bushings are worn on one side on one unit of the 24 rows. Well, you may have 10 rows of worn parallel arm bushings versus the person with the 2-row planter can say, well, this side is good, but this side isn't. So it's very redundant what you need to do here for each row. You can't just glaze over, say, oh, it's good enough, or this one is good, then taking a sample and say, oh, this one is good, I guess they're all good. That with the all of these procedures of checking things, whether it's visually, tactilely, moving something up and down, is this bracket loose, is this Keaton seed firm or worn on this row, has to be done for each row of the planter. But also, what is very important, that you have to have eyes on your planter way prior to the planting season. So you have to put that planter in the shop. You have to secure it nicely, have good lighting. When I mean secure it nicely, to take it off the tractor or support it, whatever it may have to be. And then you need to go and study like a forensic detective. All right, you see those shows on TV like crime scene shows and everything, a forensic detective, and you have to study each part of the planter. And so you have to look at this bushing. You have to look at the same bushing on the next row. Excuse me, you have to go through all of that. You cannot leave any stone unturned. And if you look at anybody that's really accomplishing things in life, they're not painting it with the same brush, or that's good enough. Right now, the thing is that what you also have to be familiar with is what needs to be steady on your planter and what needs to move. So, for instance, we're going to go pick on the parallel arms, right? So those parallel arms have to ride up and down. So it's very important that they ride up and down freely, and the bushings in that parallel arm is nice and smooth. There's no rust in it. There's nothing. There's nothing worn. So that's very important. But now you go to the bracket for the row cleaners. Well, a bracket for the row cleaners, that needs to be secure. That's not supposed to have any movement. And this is all basic common sense. But lots of times these basic procedures get glossed over, and then you put it together and cumulatively you have a 24-row planter. We'll stick with that number. Well, this is not that good on this row, but it's really good over here. And this is okay over here, but this is really bad over here, but this is really excellent over here. And it's all over the map. And when you have a planter that's all over the map, that's like taking, you have an 8-cylinder engine and every spark plug is gapped at a different gap. All right, so the engine is not that happy. Will the engine run? Yes. Will your corn crop grow? Yes. But are you going to get your potentially best yield from placing that seed properly in the soil and covering it properly? No, you're not going to. But so you have to get familiar with that. You have to look things over. You have to it's going to be a combination of feeling tactile, move, trying to move things, and also an in-depth inspection. That's why you don't want to do this one day prior to the planter going, or 1 week prior to the planter going into the field, all right? So very, very important. And like I said, that's a thought process. Now, what a lot of people, and I know that a lot of people do this, but a lot of people don't. It's probably a 50-50 split. But when you have to analyze in your mind how that planter rides across your field, So when it's riding across the field, the row unit is going to have a certain amount of inherent weight on the gauge wheels. All right, so when you look at your row unit, there's going to be three distinct areas of downforce on that row unit. So the first area of downforce is the inherent weight of the row unit. And most row units weigh between 150 and 200 pounds. So regardless, if you have that planter sitting in the shop floor on concrete and that row unit is down, the weight of that 150 or 200 pounds is going to be pressing on the gauge wheels, all right? And then there is additional weight that is applied by the springs. If you have a planter like myself, like mine, or you have a pneumatic planter or some sort of planter that actually applies downforce. A lot of people have some sort of system that applies downforce, right? So you have that, and the purpose of that downforce and that on the planter is so those opening discs are able to make the seed trench properly. Right, and then now you're going to have a third dynamic happening, which is going to be the resistance of the soil. So it's going to be the upward force of the soil. So you have the row unit, this, let's say, 200-pound row unit, and it's going to be trying to go into, with the disc opener, trying to go into the field at 2 inches. All right, and the fact of the matter is that you're going to have the weight of it, and you're going to have the additional weight. All right, and some people call it, when you have a pneumatic system, they call it a margin, but we're just going to call it the weight applied by the springs or the hydraulic, because everybody doesn't have hydraulics or pneumatics on their planter. But then you're going to have the soil, and the soil is going to want to say, I'm not going to let you go in here. I'm not going to let this disc opener, whether it's a single disc opener or a double disc opener, go and penetrate this soil. I'm only going to let it penetrate it so far. And if you're a no-till guy, that's really, really important. So you have to be able to acknowledge what's going on with this, and you have to be able to set this up so you could have uniformity on each row unit. So one row unit's not pushing down further than the other. Now, a person like me who does not have any control circuits on my planter is going to be fighting something that is almost impossible to overcome. And that's the variation in soil as you go across the field. So this part of the field has different soil texture than 10 acres away, but also the weight coming off the planter. Now, that is not insurmountable, all right? It's not insurmountable, but it will never act, well, you will never get the same result of depth control as you would with a feedback system that's going to monitor the fertilizer coming off, the seed coming off, and the penetration into the soil. But it's very important for you to understand that, because if you have an excessive amount of downforce on the planter, on the gauge wheels, you're going to have the possibility of actually causing of causing compaction. So we have to be concerned. So we have to recognize that. And a lot of people confuse that with the closing wheel force. And the closing wheel force is different than that. That is independent of that planter downforce, which is basically, in essence, you could think of the planter downforce, before we go to the short break, of the amount of weight on the gauge wheels, which is ultimately going to impact the depth of the seed from the opener. Amount of weight on the gauge wheels if that planter is just sitting there and not doing anything. So please sit pat, and we will be back in a few minutes. Welcome to Bushels and Cents from Farm Machinery Digest Radio, heard exclusively on Sirius XM Channel 147 Rural Radio. I am your host, Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer, and never forget, it is not what you make, but what you keep that counts. Many shop manuals from the vehicle equipment manufacturer are offered as a digital download for a fraction of the price of the previous printed version. With the complexity of even 15-year-old machines, it is foolish and cost ineffective to not have a shop manual. Find out which manuals are offered digitally and make the purchase. I then send the file to either an office supply store or to a print shop. For a few dollars, they publish and put it in a binder. Agriculture runs on machinery, profits on reliability. Visit farmmachinerydigest.com, where steel and soil meet.
Amazon Ag Equipment is the top of the line for top growers and producers. Engineered in Germany, high precision, high performance, now in the U.S. and Canada. Big iron with fewer passes, less downtime. Amazon fertilizer spreaders precisely spread urea up to 120 feet, and Amazon tillage tools handle fall or spring all in one pass. Amazon, the name that others follow. Top growers, see Amazon.net.
Tune in to Roots Run Deep, hosted by Mackenzie Kimbrough, to hear from your favorite cowboys and cowgirls, legends of ranching and rodeo, musicians, artists, influencers, and brands who hold the Western lifestyle at heart. Embracing our heritage and keeping legacies alive, stay tuned as we showcase shades of our Southwestern lifestyle. Listen Friday and Saturday nights at 11 Eastern and Sunday nights at 8. And for more, visit RootsRunDeepAZ.com.
All righty, welcome back to the show. But before I get into the closing wheels, I just want to give you a bit of advice. There are many good programs, and I'm going to use them schools or classes, on setting up and going through your planter. The PTI Farm, Precision Technologies, part of AGCO in Pontiac, Illinois, has excellent programs there. You may want to reach out to them. They are not brand specific, so it makes no difference. Even though they're owned by AGCO, it doesn't make a difference if you have a Case IH Early Riser, you got a Kinsey, because a lot of these things that I'm discussing and that they discuss there are foundational and fundamental. So it's fundamental. So just like if you're gapping this type of spark plug or that type of spark plug, the dynamics are the same. It doesn't make a difference whether it's going to a Ford engine or a Toyota engine. The theory of gapping a spark plug is the same. But I want to go back and what you need to do is you have to look at your planter and you have to say to yourself, well, you have to start to quantify, put a number on different things, specifically with pressures. And even if it's a planter with feedback control, just because the monitor says it's putting down 200 pounds of pressure, that does not mean it is actually happening. All right. So this all has to be checked, and it's be difficult for me to go through this and how to do it on each planter on a radio show. So that's why I want you to look into a higher level of education than I could give you here. But what I would like for you to do, because we only have a couple of minutes left, about 6 minutes, is that we were talking about before the break about the downforce on the gauge wheels, and we started to talk about compaction. Now, keep in mind that the closing wheels need to work with and close that furrow and crumble that soil, all right? And if there's any sidewall compaction because of you having excessive force on your gauge wheels, it all has to deal with it if the soil is wet. So the closing wheel pressure and the downforce pressure of the row unit work hand in hand like bacon and eggs. And there's nothing you could do about it, but you have to recognize it and adjust for it, if that makes sense. All right, so the thing basically is that if you excessively compact the soil because you have too much pressure on your gauge wheels, then those closing wheels may need to have a little bit of additional pressure to fracture that sidewall compaction and to cover that seat up. So it works hand in hand. But one of the most important things that people neglect is that, for instance, even you look at a brand new expensive planter, they have an arm in the back, right, with different notches. All right, when I have my gauge wheels set, closing wheels set, and I have copperhead egg furrow cruisers, so they're spiked closing wheels, I have it in the second notch. There's, I think, four or five notches on my planter. I don't remember at this particular point. It's something that you look at, but you don't recall. How much pressure is that? Well, if you don't measure it, you have no idea. And the thing is that, as I was saying in the opening segment, if you have a four-row planter, then you have the potential of having four different pressures on those closing wheels because the mechanical dynamics of them, maybe the handle is in backwards, or it's worn, or the spring is worn, or it's rusty, or all these different components. So you have to check this. And one of the easiest things to check is the closing wheel pressure, all right? And all you're going to need to do is you're going to make a one-time investment for what they would call like a crane scale that you'd go on a hook, that goes on a hook, or you could probably buy one for $40 or $50, if even that. It doesn't have to be overly accurate, all right? And what you're going to do is you're going to put the planter down on a level surface, whether it's a driveway or in your farm shop or what have you, and you're going to take a floor jack, like you would lift up a vehicle, and you're going to lift up the row unit until the parallel arms are more or less straight. All right, so you don't have to put a level on eyeball straight because they're going to move as the planter goes across the field. And then what you're going to do is you're going to hook up this crane scale to the bracket for the closing wheels, and you're going to either have your buddy lift up the row unit or put a bar in there or something for leverage, a piece of pipe, and you're going to lift up the row unit, and you're going to write down in a notebook how much pressure are on those closing wheels, how much weight, because when you lift it up against the scale, you're going to hook up the scale, so when you lift up the row unit, that you're going to be able to measure the force by those springs. Because you may find that, I'm making up numbers, you may find that this row unit on the second notch is 80 pounds. Well, you go over to the next row unit, well, that spring is a little bit more worn, or there's something is whatever in there, and it's 62 pounds, all right? Very, very important for you to do this, even if you have a high-tech unit. If you have a high-tech unit with all these feedback and control circuits, they bring in their own potential problem because you have airbags or some pneumatic system on the closing wheels. It doesn't, you know, so you're sitting in the cab happy as a lark, right? Oh, I'm putting 62 pounds in all my 24 rows closing wheels. Well, if you don't quantify that and check it in the farm shop before you go into the field to plant, all you're looking at it is a number. So it's like looking at a broken clock. A broken clock tells the right time twice a day, right? So you don't get fooled by having some sort of control circuit on it, because you are assuming, you're working on the assumption that the control circuit is not skewing whatsoever and that everything is the same. And yes, it gives you the ability to do that, to vary the pressures, for instance, on the closing wheels. But the fact of the matter is you need to quantify. You need to be able to say, how much is this actually putting down? And another mistake, now I'm a small Mickey Mouse operation, but if you're running huge acres and you only have one set of closing wheels, all right, you're going to find that if you want to do this properly, and you could talk to your agronomist about this, is that you're going to have to say, well, in this field, in this 50 acres, I want a spiked wheel and a flat, and two spike wheels, what have you, all right? Or just a rubber wheel. It's very, very important. But listen, I'm sorry that I could not go into more detail, and hopefully I didn't give you enough just to get you in trouble. But know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America.
Justin Mills here, rancher and host of the Working Ranch Radio Show, inviting you to join us on Saturday and Sunday at 12 noon Eastern on Rural Radio Channel 147. We'll go in depth on topics that are relevant to the beef industry. Plus, we'll hear from meteorologist Don Day on the long-term weather outlook, and the Captain Tim O'Byrne with Working Ranch Magazine will stop in for Tim's 2 cents. So join us on Saturday and Sunday at 12 noon Eastern for the Working Ranch Radio Show on Rural Radio Channel 147 Sirius XM.
I'm Mark Oppold with an American Agriculture History Minute brought to you by AgriLiquid. Be sure your crop nutrition plan is ready to go this spring with Pro Germinator from AgriLiquid. Visit agriliquid.com. Ohio State University was founded in 1870 as a land-grant university under the Morrill Act of 1862 and the name Ohio Agricultural and Mechanical College. Initially, it was thought one of Ohio's two existing universities, Ohio University and Miami University, would be designated as the land-grant institution, and each, in fact, engaged in a vigorous competition to win over the state legislature. However, it was ultimately decided to establish a new university located near the legislature in Columbus. And that's today's American Agriculture History Minute.
If you're serious about ag, it's time to get real and get connected with Real Ag Radio. We'll talk markets, agronomy, machinery, and cover the real-time issues affecting farmers and ranchers in Canada and all of North America.
Get real and get connected with Real Ag Radio at 4:30 Eastern, and don't miss the replay at 7 in the morning on Rural Radio 147 and the SiriusXM app.
I'm Lisa Harville from Carthage, Tennessee. Thanks for listening to Rural Radio 147 on SiriusXM.